Blog Talk Radio.
He leads me beside still waters. Restoreth my soul. When you become a believer, spirit is made right. Sometimes soul doesn't get the notice. It has a hole in it due to things that happened in the past, hurt, abuse, molestation. But we want to speak to you today and tell you that God wants to heal the hole in your soul. Some people's actions are not because their spirit is wrong, but it's because the past has left a hole in their soul. May this wisdom help you get over your past and remind you that God wants to heal the hole in your soul. I have my sister Leandria here. She's going to help me share this wisdom and tell this story.
God, deliver me, 'cause all I seem to do is hurt me. Hurt me, Lord, deliver me, 'cause all I see to do is hurt me.
Yes, sir.
Opportunity to come before you on Marvelous Monday. And that's what it's all about. You might ask, why should I check out Talking Real to You? First of all, it gives you an opportunity to just talk about plain old life issues. because we had a lot of things going on in this world that we need to talk about. As I go back to the beginning, as we become begin to evolve into where we are today, God blessed us to be able to start through a vision. God laid it down, and I tell everybody this story all the time. In 2017, I was living in Fort Lauderdale, Sunrise, Florida, and God said, it's something I have for you to do. He said, you know, I want you to go out, put a vessel together so the word can get out, because the word is not truly being presented. So what we're going to do is allow you to put together this podcast that evolved into now a radio station. See, God is awesome. We have 9 shows and heard in 18 countries. And God is so good. We use all the social media to get our word out. So we're just going to talk just plain old life issues tonight. The call-in number so you can be a part of the show is 347-857-4192. Press 1, and I'll make sure I get you on the line so you can chat with our awesome special guests as well as myself and the co-host that will be joining us. We already have one on the line, and we're doing the opportunity for you to go to the room, and you can be able to be visualized as well. So it's a great opportunity. Now, the web link, if you want to just hear the show, is www.blogtalkradio.com/WBSW Internet Talk Radio. Now, if you just want to email the show, you have an opportunity. You can email the show two ways. You can email LorenzaBSmith15@gmail.com or WBSWInternetTalkRadio@gmail.com. Also, if you want to tweet the show, you have a great opportunity because you can also tweet the co-host that joins us, and you can, even if they're not with us, you still can tweet them and share how exciting the show was or what's your questions, because you'll make sure they get them in to me. You can tweet the show at particularly Talking Real to You, at the Smith Wave Production, at WBSW_Internet_Talk_Radio, as well as at Lorenza D. Smith, at Coach_L_Smith. So you have a great opportunity to share your voice, share your thoughts with us through those various ways through social media. You also can go to Instagram. We're glad to have all these opportunities. And you can definitely go to WBSW_Internet_Talk_Radio, or you can go to Zeta Phi Sigma Greenville, and you can be a part of it. And I thank each and every one of those individuals that's already joining us. So we're just truly being blessed. God has touched us, so we'll be able to come before you at this point. Now, I have some awesome individuals that join us as co-hosts. We have several. Some are able to come in on the Mondays and not. But I know these two are always there with me. I guess I'll give them one on my right arm and the other one can take my left. And that way we can go down the road and make things happen like we're doing. But for those individuals who's not on the line as of yet, I want to give a shout out definitely to Dr. Olivia E. Smith. And she promised me she would be here tonight, so she's going to tune in a little bit. We have Ms. Lauren D. Smith joining us. We also have Ms. Tina Robinson, and we have two beautiful young ladies that's joining us. And I'm going to start off with this young lady. She's in that sunny state of Florida, originally from the state of Ohio, which is she's at the northern point, as far as you can get before you get to Canada, Cleveland, and she made that fast dash down to the beautiful weather of South Florida in Boca Raton, Florida. None other than, I'll say, truly an expert whether it's with yoga, whether it's just working with young people, just counseling through the various things they may encounter, as well as adults, none other than Lisa Levine. How you doing, Lisa?
Good, Dr. Lowe. How are you?
Oh, doing well. Just to have be able to make this room work, it is good to be able to see you, have you in the presence. I can see you right there, just enjoying you. You say you're kind of tired because you've been working all day, but that's how you make all that money that you make. Our next co-host, this young lady, I tell you, she's full of so much spirit. Wouldn't trade her for nothing in the world. I hope she wouldn't trade me. She hails from the state of South Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina. She's a retired educator. She's a retired administrator. She's a retired counselor. She's a retired lover of children. She's a lifelong learner herself, as well as an educator. She's also proud. I give a shout out to this young lady because not just anything different than anybody, but she's dear to me. She's part of the blue and white family. She's a member of the finest womanhood of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, Scarlet H. Black. But I'm going to put Sarah Scarlet H. Black. How you doing, Scarlet?
I am doing fine tonight. How are you? And no, I wouldn't trade you for the world.
Come on now. See, now y'all
I would
get
not trade
stand
you
up.
For the world.
Are you going to have me standing up in this chair, this hot chair? I had to get in a hot chair to talk to you. That's what it's all. Thank you so much, Scarlett, for joining us. It's a blessing to have you here. Now, before we introduce our special guest, I want to take this opportunity. I try to do every show, and I do. We have a Black History Moment, and I tell everybody I know. They say, well, you don't talk about nobody but Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity. Yes, I do. And I talk about Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated as well. However, I always try to grab the many individuals who made contributions to our world, to Black history. No other than one of our brothers out of the state of Ohio. He's a motivation speaker, a radio personality. He also served as a member of the Ohio House of Representatives for District 29 from 1977 to 1983. None other than our brother, Les Calvin Brown. So we're going to recognize and give a shout out to Brother Brown and the many things he's still doing as the motivation speaker. And we're just so glad, and that's how we're going to honor our Black History Moment today. It's so good to be able to recognize another Sigma making a difference. That's what it's all about. All right, let's get to our title of our show tonight. Is, you know, when I received it, it was on when I set up through Blog Talk Radio or through the radio station. I have only so many characters I can use in the space. I couldn't fit everything in there. So, however, this is going to be special because when this young lady starts sharing some things with you, I'm going to put it just like it was printed out from the beginning. We're talking about your zip code and some of the legal methods of discrimination in the pandemic in regards to education, lending, and housing. This young lady is a law professor. She's truly, truly a representative of the organization she's so proud of. She's a tenured professor of law and has been with Oklahoma City University for 18 years. Besides her duties as a faculty member, she works with individuals and groups to explore their past experiences, looking to where they have encountered some bias, work to the point of offering them their self-identity in the form of a preparation for inclusion work. She's a certified diversity professional, an IDI qualified administrator, have a certificate in diversity and inclusion from Cornell University. She also had an opportunity during the pandemic. She's still working so hard, even though, you know, whatever the circumstances were. She said, now I want to start me a business that's going to provide help to individuals. She found a consulting business named Our Works, LLC. They work with clients in diversity, inclusion, equity, and justice space. She can be heard mostly on social media platforms, and she has done many other things. And she's a member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, none other than, okay, there we go. I almost said professor. I'm doing it like this. Sarah, professor, attorney, Danae L. Johnson. How you doing, sister?
I am doing so well, and thank you for that very generous introduction. I am smiling from ear to ear. Happy to be here with you.
I am so happy to have you. I'm quite sure each of the co-hosts that are available right now is happy as well, because, see, God has blessed us with someone to be in the presence that's going to share some things that's going to make a difference for somebody. And all they have to do is touch one. Because when you touch one, you touch many, because it can spread from there. So we're not going to hold you up. We're going to let you do your thing. We want you to add anything else to your bio that I may have missed, and then we can jump right in discussing some legal methods of discrimination during the pandemic. Then we'll focus on education, lending, housing. A lot of this based on your zip code. Attorney Johnson, the floor is now yours.
Thank you so much. I don't think there is anything else I need to add about my bio. You have hit all the high points, and we might as well go ahead and get started with the important topic of the evening, I think.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, she missed you. You did miss Attorney Johnson about your affiliation with the two Supreme Court justices. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Justice Sotomayor.
Yep, absolutely. So I've been able to meet and speak with both of those ladies. I led the American Association of Law School section on women, all of the female professors of law in the United States. I led that organization, and we presented Ruth Bader Ginsburg a Lifetime Achievement Award. So we had a delegation go to Washington, D.C., meet in her chambers, and I spoke at a memorial after her death. So she is very near and dear to my heart. And my second most favorite justice sitting on the bench now is Sotomayor. Justice Sotomayor is dynamic in every way, and she really sees all of the issues that are important to all of the people. So I appreciate her as well.
That's awesome. I can say from the just getting started up, just that personal being in that same room and networking with those individuals means a whole lot. And some people don't realize it's sometimes being around individuals. That way you're in the present, you're able to ask the questions, share the knowledge and whatever you have. And it's awesome to hear the opportunities you have already encountered. God hasn't any more for all of us. And I know you know that God has other things that you're going to be doing, going to make an impact, continuous throughout this country. So we're so glad having you here. So we want to get started, first of all, about some of the legal methods of discrimination and things that have been that's occurred in regard during the pandemic that really has caused us to begin to notice it so we could make a difference. And we want you to share some of the things that we can have noticed, but maybe we just became rose glasses toward tone deaf toward it. Can you share some things on that?
Absolutely. I think that there's no doubt that prior to the pandemic, African Americans, women, children, people with disabilities were already in a vulnerable position. So our pre-existing vulnerabilities were already there in terms of our socioeconomic status and our health. If you look at information about our savings, our incomes, job security, and all of those many factors, we were already vulnerable. And when the pandemic came, it really took our vulnerabilities and exposed them to the world. The pre-existing vulnerabilities were exacerbated. And so when we talk about discrimination, the number one factor in how you will come out of the pandemic is the same as the number one factor for life expectancy and educational achievement. It's the zip code. It's about where you live and the concentration of people in the area. That has everything to do with these issues.
Awesome. And since you brought up about the zip code, it's one of the things I really want individuals to be able to understand, that how important it is to understand that sometimes your zip code keeps a lot of things from you. We won't move a little bit further, but the pandemic kind of equalized a few things, but also the things that was already there that began to exacerbate it even more. So as you look at, for example, I know a lot of things didn't happen in the legal system in regards to during the first period of the pandemic, but how would you say being in law, how it has, in essence, I'm going to say, changed the opportunity for us to even have equal footing through law because of the pandemic or because of our zip code?
Absolutely. So leading up to the pandemic, you heard a lot of information about African-American women, particularly opening small businesses. And that was all over the news. African-American women have a great amount of educational attainment at this particular juncture, and we open more small businesses than any other group. Every small business was hit hard by the pandemic, which means that we were hit particularly hard. And when relief came available, there were banks offering loans and assistance. Because we are small businesses, understaffed and under-resourced, we didn't have the type of legal team at hand to apply for those supports. When we finally figured out how to apply for the supports, many banks had given out the money that they had allotted. So we were just out of luck. So you see many African-American businesses failed. So even though things were in place from a legal perspective, we didn't have the resources to access the support. It left us out.
Wow.
So, Attorney Johnson, now that this new round of stimulus, this $1.9 trillion, has gone out or is going out, how is, and the president has made sure and targeted middle to low income people, how is it going to be different this time? Have you seen anything coming down that talks about the difference and how the small businesses in these communities can now have access without having to compete with the corporations and the big businesses and big donors and people of wealth in the top 1%?
Yep, I haven't seen anything that really would help small businesses other than two things. We now have experience. Those that survived have experience. We've been able to see how it works. And we've done a lot of large corporate shaming. So there were large corporations and large institutions like Harvard University. Harvard University received support during the pandemic. But Harvard mm-hmm. University didn't need that support because they have a huge endowment. They were not on the brink of anything. So that public shaming made Harvard return those monies. So I think public shaming has gone a long way to perhaps allowing us to get in. But other than that, I'm not sure what else is actually being done to help us survive.
There are lots of institutions. Help us access or fill out the information to make sure that we can get the applications in.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, Scarlett, you brought it up, and I'll just tell from my personal experience that I can say when the first opportunity came out with the PPP or the EIDL, if y'all remember that,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of us were left out and didn't have an opportunity because your large corporation and your big business just gobble all the money up. And then you had some other things that was going on. I don't want to get into it on this show by some people through fraudulent action. However, when the $1.9 trillion was signed by our President Biden, the door, I can tell you, as a small business, have opened up where there's a threshold. They're addressing individuals at $100,000 and addressing those individuals so they're small. Because you're talking about small business, the middle class is going to fall in that category. And they're making sure they, you know, because a lot of work has been done, because I know I watch it and I see it, and I think the other night about three nights ago, it kind of opened back up where you can put in your PPP application so you can have an opportunity to receive that funding for forgiveness. But they was not going beyond that to those people over, you know, because all those people got a lot of the money the first time. So the threshold is $100,000. I don't care if you put down $100,000, $125,000, $140,000, they're going to threshold. They made sure that they try to fund the smaller and the minority business through this money first. Now, we're not saying what's going to happen after, but I know for sure all you have to do is go to the PPP or whatever, apply for it. They're going to tell you, because I know I've worked with people on it. It's a threshold, $100,000, and it might be 2% of that, whatever percentage of that you can get. But it's there for you, but you got to use for payroll, 60% of it. And you also got to put in the work for the forgiveness, too. So through this $1.9 trillion, I know it's working a little bit better for the ones who are trying to apply for the EID. I'm going to talk about the EID in a minute. I'm not trying to take over
since
we were talking about it. For the PPP, if you apply and have everything in order, there's a good chance you're going to be awarded. And it had over 8 million applicants who have applied that are in the nature under that threshold of 100,000. So it is working better, because I know the first time it didn't work too well because money was gobbled up. And then even with the EID, since we're talking about funding, is that only the people who did not receive it the first time and the people that didn't get the 10,000 are put on what they call a target EID list. And you receive the email saying that you – so there are some things being done that allow you and allow minorities, allow small business, mom and pop, middle class, the opportunity to get some of this funding that we couldn't get before. Some people got it, but some people didn't get it because through fraudulent acts by certain people, that money was used up. And so they are trying to address that. So I just wanted to jump in right there and share, but, you know, it's got to have that knowledge to know that you apply for it as a business and your threshold is $100,000, and they can give you an opportunity to get the $20,000. That's the max it's going to be, $20,833, and you can work in this thing of forgiveness. That's the only thing you're going to forgive, $20,833 below. They're not forgiving everything else because it is a loan at 1%.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to jump in and share that. Thank you. Thank you so much. The call-in number so you can be a part of this is 347-857-4192. Press 1, and I'll make sure we get you on the line so you can ask your question as well as offer your comment, your expertise in regards to our special guest. We have Attorney Johnson sharing some things about what has occurred through education. We're going to talk about lending, talk about housing, as well as legal methods based a lot of time on your zip code. So make sure you call in and be a part of this. We're going to move forward, and I'm going to ask our other co-host, Lisa, does she have any questions she want to jump in? We also have a – she said she can't hear. That's all right. I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Scarlett, I'm working on it. Stop laughing.
Yeah,
because
y'all
I know
always got a problem. It never fails every week. That's why we called in.
There you go. But before we ask you another question, Attorney Johnson, Eva, start with another discussion. We have our co-host on, hail from the state of Georgia. None other than our Dr. O. We call her Dr. O. That's Dr. Olivia E. Smith. Dr. Smith, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you all?
Lord have mercy. So, so good to hear your voice. How you doing?
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
See how long we've been. She's been really glad with some things. Yeah, exactly. So we're going to move forward and kind of just take the topic and the title and kind of work with it a little bit more. We want to look at education. We already know. We know what's going on because I know what's happening locally in education. But what is your thought in regards to education? What's happening to education? Is it going to be a plus? Is it a negative? Just share your thoughts in regards to what's going on with education during the pandemic and what legal avenues some people may have. But just we want to just touch on education right now.
Absolutely. When we think about what's going on in education with the pandemic, something that is near and dear to my heart is how are students with specialized plans being served? Those who have individual education plans, those who are in special education, how are they being served even when remote education is at its peak? The answer is they're not, and that's a violation of the law, but right now there's no one checking that. So children who have IEPs and special educational requirements under state and federal law, those children aren't being served. People who need distraction-free environments, that really can't work out when you're at home on the computer with full access to the Internet. When you need questions fed to you a certain number at a time because of your own difficulty in getting the information, that's not being attended to. So you could go through the entire list of accommodations that students have a right to. No one's monitoring that. No one has that in place. That's every form of discrimination there. And it impacts many African-American, indigenous, and people of color. We are a large proportion of those groups. So it's just the lack of enforcement in that area.
So what would a parent have to do? Because even with students who are not in specialized programs like special ed and resource services, at the end of this pandemic, because even our regular students are falling so far behind, what would be the recourse in terms of the law that we already know exists for students with IEPs and things of that nature? What would be the recourse, or would they be able to have a recourse with this? Because the law is being violated. There's a lot of talk, even in our area, about kids who are autistic, kids who are in self-contained programs and need more specialized services, you know, during a regular day, and parents are not able to give that to them because of the specialization that's needed.
Right. And many parents are not trained. So they rely on the resources at the school and in after-school programs and care programs to provide this assistance. But because we've been in the pandemic, we've not been able to provide that kind of assistance. So the recourse could always be reporting, but the question is, how do you catch it up? And I don't know that there's a real method to catch it up and get it fixed. Some children have indeed lost a year of education. And the question would be, as a group, as a community, perhaps as an individual parent, do you want to repeat that year? Is there something in 7th grade science or 11th grade science that you feel like your child just doesn't know? Do you want to repeat that year?
It's like to me, if you're talking about repeating, it's the child that's being punished and not the system.
Absolutely. That's one way to look at it, but we got to figure out what's best for the child. Everybody's in the same boat at the same time. I think we have to think of timing. Do we want school to be over? Most of us would say yes at 18, or because of the pandemic and the lack of education, do we want to extend school and now it's over at 19? Most people are against that because we don't want to be in school one more minute.
Yes, one more year.
I think we have to really figure it out, what's working. Many parents weren't able to stay at home with their children because they had to leave their homes even during the pandemic and work. There's no way to tell if your child is getting work done or not, how much TV your children are watching, and whether or not they are actually online school. All of that poses a great threat as we continue forward.
And it's true, right. That's a problem.
It is.
But again, you know, I just don't believe in punishing the children because our systems have failed them.
Yeah.
And Lisa talks a lot about, you know, we talk a lot on this show about the fact that we're going to need a lot of mental health services, and they should be free.
Yep.
You know, based
much
on what,
of that mental health.
What these children are going through.
Yep.
And then
much of that was coming through the school.
Yeah.
Many children were getting
And it was coming through some schools very poorly.
Yep.
Because
yep.
when you have budget cuts, that's one of some of the first programs that go, counseling services.
Yes. Yeah.
And right. And the thing is, do we need to have programs in the summer where children will be able to try to get something back, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But with the specialized, you know, one thing we haven't touched on this show, we haven't thought about it, are those kids in those specialized services.
Yep.
And they already are behind the eight ball. And now, you know, put 3 or 4 eight balls up there that they're losing out on.
Yep.
And I just don't know where, you know, even with the money, even in all the money that's come out recently, you're going to have a lot of money to try to get Congress to approve, and we know the difficulty they had with that, to really help America's children.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The needs, it's even as we stand here today, it is difficult to measure the depth of the need. Some of the things that have happened to children and the trauma, we won't know. There are some children who like to go to school because they get a break from their home life. School for them is a respite. But now you've had those children at home in environments that might not have been good for those children. So they were happy to go to school. They'd be the first kids in school. They got fed. They got encouragement. They got attention. They haven't had those things in a whole year.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, they have.
So we got to figure out what we can do. Like, because there are lots of groups. If you think about Boys and Girls Clubs, if you think about the Y, if you think about youth clubs, the sororities and fraternities, everybody has a youth club. Is there a way that those organizations can come to fill the gap as we open up? Where do we contribute our dollars to support children? because the need is great right now.
And it's true, truly, we have to keep that. And it's enough to have you have a sigh. You're like, wow, what we going to do? I think always Scarlett and Lisa always talking about, you know, how the children are one being left out. And sometimes we always want to be, we know we can't function without the children. I use, for example, locally, children have been out of school, some of them all year.
Yep.
And now they're said we want to bring them back on April the 5th. And truly, you know, as an educator, Scarlett can attest to this. You know, at the beginning of the year, you get a child. You have to make some adjustments. They have to make some adjustments. But if they've been out of school now, almost, be honest, now, almost a year and a half to some sense.
Yes.
I'm saying in certain areas. Meaning that March was when they shut everything down, and now we're into talking about bringing them back on April 5th in this particular area. And what's going to happen is they keep saying they're only coming back for the test. They come and take a test. To me, again, the children are losing out.
But the thing is, things weren't good before the pandemic.
Exactly.
You
and
know, a lot of schools in this country, things were not good before the pandemic.
Some of that was on purpose, schools being underfunded, schools being miseducated in mass, not focusing on things that students needed. And again, the pandemic only shined a light on these weaknesses that already existed.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And that's what we have to realize. We got to have a major, some kind of plan. I don't care how much fun that we throw. We got to have some plans how we're going to get this back on track somehow, some way. Because, again, our children are the ones that's truly losing out. And they're being affected so many ways, not just basically educational, we know mentally, we know emotionally, you know, socially, and they do. They have a lot of friends. They like, you know, we can communicate. They can use this iPad to do all that stuff. But the bottom line, it is helpful for growth when they're in and around young people, their peers. And what we're missing is that they're having so many challenges. Our question is, what plan do we have so when we send them, when we get back to some normalcy, some sense of normal, whatever it may be, what do we have to get our children ready to deal with being actually a year behind? And if you're an educator, you know one of those things. If a child miss a year, got a chance of might finish high school or close to finish school. If they miss 2 years, they fall in that other category. So the point is, how many children are we going to lose because of not being in a classroom, not being able to go to a class?
You know,
I know people are saying,
one thing is, we're not keeping track of the children we're losing right now. If you look at the number of children that we have not heard from during the year, we should be outraged.
Yep.
But somehow we're not. Somehow we're not.
No, we're not.
But the number of children that no one has heard from during the pandemic.
And they're not trying to find them.
Not trying to find them.
Exactly.
We should be worried about those babies. Right?
Yes, we should.
But we're not. And I want to say another thing. We talk about children, they're able to access things on the computer and the iPad, but we have to recognize there are many places in this country that where they don't have great Wi-Fi, where they don't have access to an iPad. I think we like to believe everybody has that or everybody could get it, but it's not true. There are lots of places that don't have access, and those children are alone.
Especially
yes,
in the rural
ma'am.
Areas where you don't have the broadband services or able to, you know, connect, and also in tribal communities, Native American communities where they don't have the access. In the rural areas, you know, you're talking about folks that don't look like us. You're talking about, you know, those farm areas and places like that. We got a problem. But I guess the question for you will there be legal recourses that people can take for the missed education of their children, as Dr. Carter was talking about, you know, the miseducation of our kids.
And let me just know for sure, is it the missed days or the whole messed up education that they're receiving?
Messed up education.
You know, because they're two different kind of miseducation, right? One
Yes, it is.
One is the intentional changing of history to make one group dominant and one group inferior.
Ooh.
That's
yeah.
the miseducation that a lot of us think about. And there is no legal recourse for that until we have honest conversations about what is it to uphold white supremacy. And nobody wants to talk about that. But we need to talk about what does it mean to uphold white supremacy and how do we move away from a white supremacy culture as we work to educate all people about all history. It is important for all of us. There's this whole process when different ethnic white groups came to the United States. They gave up their ethnicity in order to be white. The Irish, they went through a homogenizing process so that they could be accepted and be white. Part of that was joining anti-abolition groups. Part of that was discriminating against blacks. They lost who they were. How many Irish, German, Polish, Italian people no longer celebrate the cultures of their grandparents? So they lost things too. And we all, as all of us, all the people, need to think about who are we? Where do we come from? And the more I can appreciate, for example, my Irish history, is the more I can understand and appreciate the African-American experience or the Cherokee experience or the Chinese experience. But if I gave up myself and my history and my language and my food, I expect that other people will do the same. And that's not fair. So we got to struggle with that. We got to struggle, everybody, to reclaim our history.
Exactly.
Amen.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You can be a part of the conversation with Attorney Johnson by calling in at 347-857-4192. Press 1. I'll make sure I get you on the line. You can chat with myself as well as Scarlet Black, Lisa Levine, Dr. O, as well as Attorney Johnson, talking about some awesome topics that we need to talk about. The problem we're having, we're not talking about these things. We're not making plans to deal with a lot of this. And what's going to happen is we're going to want to react to it instead of being proactive. And we have an opportunity now to be proactive. We know what the problem is, and everybody pretty much know me. I'm a person like this. Now, I cherish the past, but I definitely try to live here right now so I can grow in the future. Too many people spend their time trying to cherish the past and not look at what is the solution, I call it, or what happened in the past. We got to move forward. We got to put our heads together. We got to be able to communicate. We got to be able to talk. And everybody got to be able to listen, because you don't have good communication unless both of you are able to listen to each other.
Yeah.
You can't have
yeah.
one person talking down to you and want you to listen. This is not on a job where you're going to be this, you know, because you're in charge. We got to be able to communicate, and that's one of the things we got to do. We got to address the problem with children. And I always say I'm going to fight hard for everybody, but I'm going to fight even harder for children. Sometimes
yeah.
adults
yeah.
can make it, but children not going to make it unless you got somebody advocate for them. I tell everybody on my Tuesday and Thursday show, I talk about, you know, black boys. You know, I'm an advocate for Boys Rock. I'm in a fraternity. Have an awesome Sigma Beta Club where we can
yep.
mentor and train them and show them where they can go and how they can be. We're going to model good behavior. We got to do things. We got to have a plan. We can't spend arguing, fussing about the problem. Let's talk about a solution. And we're missing that. So now we're led to legal ramification now. We're moving toward legal things now where we could move toward solving some of these problems by putting plans together. Let's move to the next topic, Attorney Johnson, in regards to lending. Now, I know we just talked about this money, the $1.9 billion, and making sure that our minority business, our small business, our mom and pop, that threshold of $100,000 below, have an opportunity to get some of this funding to help their payroll. If it's 2, 3, 4 workers, whatever it may be, but be forgiven for that. We know things are in place. In regards to lending, one thing financially, we have to make sure we are stewards and we're sound. Just, can you share your thoughts in regards to lending and how the pandemic have kind of changed some people's mindset? And then sometimes how your zip code determines what lending institution you can go to.
Absolutely. If we think about lending and banking and zip codes, you will see that zip codes where people don't have high incomes, those areas are what we call underbanked. They're not banks in those communities. But if we look at payday loan centers and things like that, you can find those, right?
I like what you said. You said underbanked. Underbanked. That's awesome word. Underbanked. Never heard that one.
Underbanked. Right? There's some communities you go to, and when you drive through, they're lovely homes, and there's a bank on every corner.
All the banks
are there. But you drive through other neighborhoods, and you can drive and drive right through it, and there's no bank.
No bank.
Sometimes you have an off-name ATM machine charging you a $4 fee.
Yes, you can find the check cashing location.
So it's part of this whole zip code being a function of redlining. We have been excluded from certain places and clustered together in other places. And when you look at that race, economy, as a function of zip code, you see that those places are underbanked. You see that banks like Wells Fargo call minority clients mud people and put them into certain types of loans.
Mud people, like M-U-D.
Yes.
Yeah. M-U-D.
Yes. That was a term used by Wells Fargo lenders for certain types of loans and certain types of people. But again, this had been going on before the pandemic. So we get to the pandemic and people are trying to figure out, what do I do about my mortgage? Am I able to go and get a loan because my business might fail? We have to leave our communities to seek lenders. And these are lenders who don't know us, who don't have relationships with us. These are lenders who didn't know us, and so they didn't call us about the PPP money. These are lenders who left us out already. Those are the people we have to rely on when we are in a crisis. So we really need to figure out how it is that we can find banks to be in our community and how we can bank with Black, Indigenous, and people of color. In addition, all of the organizations who have come out after the murder of George Floyd, and they have all of these platitudes and aspirational statements about how they're going to invest in brown people, Black people, we need to ask that they deposit their money in communities, in those branches. You got one branch of a national bank in the Black community, I'd like you to transfer all your deposits to that one branch.
Exactly.
I mean, because that's going to have a huge impact. That branch, they're going to have to hire more people. They're going to have to expand. Yes. They will employ more people from that community. They will bring all the good kind of traffic you want in a community. That's one of the things we should think about.
Excellent.
Yes, that's an awesome idea too. And that, we have to happen like that, because I know I've been in small communities where I've worked before as an educator. They got a school or two there, but they may not even have a bank. You got to go 20 miles for a bank. You have to figure out a bank is one of those neighborhoods only going to invest in people that they know. And a lot of times it is not all of the color that I am walking in that bank. Sometimes we're dealing with that. And we got to be able to take the idea that Attorney Johnson said, we got to kind of hold individuals accountable. Hold them accountable. Like, okay, we have several social justice issues that we addressed during this time. Last year, up until whenever you want to say. But we got to come together and say, okay, now, you need to take that money. If you Wells Fargo in my neighborhood, take some of that other funding from the mother place and put it in that way so it'll create another job, too.
That's
got to be a demand. That should be part of the plan when we want change.
Absolutely. I would like you to invest your money and hold it in this bank here, in this community here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the only way we can do and make impact and get out of from under this mentality.
But you still got to lift your voice. You got to live with
the,
you got to lift your voice. You can't do it in silence.
That's right.
You can't do it without raising your voice. And I'm not talking about yelling or whatever, but opening your mouth and speaking and letting people know what you will accept and what you will not accept.
Absolutely.
You know.
And I think we have to be prepared with suggestions.
Yes.
It's not enough for us to be in partnership with groups that want to help. We got to have a list of here are 5 things you can do to help.
Right now.
Exactly.
Right now today. How about one of these 5 things?
Because
sometimes they put us on committees and we join with partnerships because they want us to be in the room. But when we get in the room, we have to use all our power and all our privilege to advocate for change, which means we have to think about it before we get there.
That's why I didn't stay on one committee long enough, because they put me off quickly. The state senator, he went to the national representative, Bob Inglis. He was a Republican, wanted a committee, and wanted some minorities on it to give him suggestions, ideas. And we finally told him, every time we say something to you, you don't take it, and we don't hear from it again.
Yeah.
So after that, I wasn't invited back.
That's how it works. And when that happens to us, we should be okay with that, because there is some other place to give our time and our talent and our brain power. There's another place for us.
There is a place. That's awesome, right there, Attorney Johnson, as well as Carl.
Yeah, like that. And what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep, exactly. We're going to kind of move forward with it. One more area you want to focus on in regards to housing. How, in regards to, we know the pandemic created people couldn't pay their mortgage, and some people can't pay the rent, so they had a moratorium on that to a certain point. But that's still not saying you're not holding for that money for living in that place. So let's kind of share some legal or some thoughts in regards to something that, as soon as we say we're back to a normalcy, what's going to happen with those mortgage company and realtors and those rental companies, how they're going to attack. A lot of times it'd be a lot of people of color. And how do we get ourselves mentally prepared, because it's going to occur eventually. It's going to have to move. If we're going to move to a normalcy, which we're talking about the vaccine helping us move, that's going to take away that opportunity for the moratorium. Just share your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So I think as we envision coming out of the moratorium for evictions, that's the next big thing that's going to happen. And people don't want to talk about it. So landlords are not happy with the moratorium on evictions, because there are some tenants who've not paid rent in a year. But many landlords still had rental obligations, mortgage obligations. Landlords still had heating, cooling, electric, gas obligations. And so they have had to go into their own pockets to pay those things. And every rental property is not making out. There's a ton of profit. Some rental properties just break even. Those landlords are in crisis. And I think we really will look at evictions coming on strong as we move out of the pandemic. So for people who are renters who haven't been paying, I think it's a good time to start talking to the landlord about what does it look like. Is it possible to make this right, and what would that be? There are many tenants who, when the moratorium is over, they're just going to move, and then the landlord is left holding the bag. So we'll have to try and make that dance. Those who want to stay and they're in a good unit with a good landlord, they need to start having conversations. Many of the mortgages, they've just tacked on the missed payments onto the end of the term. And if we can make that up by making an extra principal payment here or there, or even a partial principal payment as we go along over the next few years, if we don't want to have the additional interest that would come from the moving back of the end date. That's
so
the way
federal,
to work
so,
with
so
that.
The federal government, for those who rent, did not, I thought there was something included in this current stimulus package that was going to address helping the landlords in those, you know, for those who have rental property to take care of their financial situation and not pass it on to the renters.
That very well could be, but I'm unfamiliar with that provision.
Okay, and I could be wrong. I thought there was something in there to address that.
It might be, but I wonder if it would be backward looking.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And it's a good thing that Attorney Johnson said about you have to be, first of all, be prepared to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
You have to talk to, and I always recommend people that are dealing with, trying to deal with their financial stability, maybe because they their credit report. You have to talk with the lenders. You have to communicate and let them know I'm having this challenge. And I think that's where, you know, we got to get some more clarity so individuals understand. Just because there's a moratorium, we don't know exactly what way it's going to go. They may be putting it back, but it's still on you. You still stayed there, and it's still under that. You sign a contract, and that contract could eventually become enforced. So you got to have communication with the landlord. You have to have communication with those individuals that you're paying your rent to. Because just because it is a moratorium don't mean that you can't come back and have to pay everything on the rear end. And it can really hurt you. And sometimes people say, I'm going to move, but you got to understand, you're still under a contractual agreement when you sign that lease for 12 months, you know, or 6 months. You know, if it was money, let me say, if it was month to month, and you still stay there, that lease is still enforceable.
Absolutely.
Some people don't believe it. They say
if the federal government is taking care of the landlord does not try to double dip and still pass that on to you. You know, so you need to be aware of what the information is in this package.
Yeah, it's very
true.
So in some states, they will mandate that the landlord disclose whatever they get, and they have to put a notice up in the vestibule of the apartment building and send a letter to all the tenants so the tenants understand the law. New York is a place like that. There are lots of things that New York City wants tenants to know. So they will send updates to landlords, and landlords are to get these things out to the tenants. There are things you are required to post in the building so that tenants are aware. So there may be other things like that that we could look forward to that explain the law to tenants.
Exactly. Communication is so important, and sometimes it's done through written. And a lot of times we have to be very, you know, we just got to be invested in our own welfare. We have to do that. What I mean is, I'm living there. I got to check and see what's going on. Don't walk by, well, they got a moratorium on. Hey, worry about it. You even look and see where he posted, because all he had to do is post on that. And even, like they said, it may be something given to those landlords to kind of help them to pay their mortgage on their place. But we don't, at this point, we don't know whether it's going to be enough to really help them in the way they need to be helped. So
these things we
have to find out. It's good to sometimes listen instead of always some people always talking. Sometimes you miss some of the things that they're sharing with you, because that's just like a contract. They have the, what you say, Scarlett, the fine print. See, we look at the big thing and overlook the fine print. So you need to make sure you hear
that you read and understand that fine print.
See, so you can understand what's being said. And when it comes to the time that everything return back, you won't be like, ain't nobody told me. But they'll say, it's been up 6 months.
Right, right.
We put something in each one of y'all mailboxes or the boxes up here. But you chose not to get it out because you thought it was a bill.
Yep.
You thought it was something asking you for money. And all it's doing is informing. So we have to look at all kind of ways to deal with these situations and not say, well, it's just, you know, they didn't do it. No, sometimes it's an effort by you. We all have to be held accountable, and we have to hold them accountable. So that's what's important. So housing, you know, has been, the market has been great, if people don't believe it. They're building houses during the pandemic. I'm telling you,
they're building houses. Bad. These folks, you're right.
The market has been great. Housing market as well as the stock market.
Folks have made money during the pandemic, big money.
Yeah,
this is the kind of economy where millionaires are made. Wow.
They've
gotten,
gotten even richer.
And
you got to remember, a lot of times when houses are built, is not based on some zip code. We got to understand that. Everybody ain't building in everybody's neighborhood now. They're building all in the neighborhood that's going to attract you. So the pandemic helped those builders, helped them open up the refinancing. You know, this guy I saw the other day, 2.28%. I said, what? That's an all-time great. And they're doing that because they want to build houses. They want to sell houses. But they're not selling the houses in our, they say your zip code. I'm not saying everybody, but they're not selling. I know the neighborhood.
Well, in some zip codes, they're doing gentrification. They're moving the residents out and building high-rise and very expensive, you know, multi-thousands of dollars, you know, high-rise apartments and condos and homes.
And as we think about this, who's able to get this low, low interest rate? Many black, indigenous, and people of color are not in the market to get any interest rate. Many of us, because of the labor that we do, the jobs that we hold, we are right on the edge of poverty. So the benefit that people who have resources can get during these times are not benefits that we all share.
Exactly. And we have to consider that. So we have to have a plan of action to kind of deal with it. You know, to have 2.228%, man, you just don't know what that would be. But it's hard to kind of get in there. It's hard to get in there.
For a homeowner, first-time home buyer, that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And I tell people, you have to make sure you keep, because they're not just going to give it to you, and I'm going to throw this out, your credit score at 550. You're not getting 2.22.
No, you ain't getting that kind of house, no.
So just because it's a pandemic, I want you to understand is you have to continue doing your best if you're capable of keeping your credit score up so you have an opportunity to have those. And then we still have another challenge because it's true. It ain't just not started. People get upset. They want to, because of my skin, sometimes keep me from getting that opportunity.
Yep.
They're going to give us a different rate when they said, no, the 2.8 was somebody for this or this. But it's for certain people. This is not just starting. We know this has been going on for a long time.
That's right.
We have to accept the reality is that we have to keep the highest threshold of our score up there so when things do come into play, we can have that chance. Not everybody. I'm not saying everybody that are in, that's to the point that not able to get it, but you got to realize people of color sometimes have a bigger challenge. And you can have an 800. You can have almost a 900. You can get a 900. People don't believe you can get a 900 on your score.
That won't get the realtor to show you the houses that you would qualify
for.
When the realtor meets you, they already have an idea based on what you look like as to what home they should show you. They haven't even had a chance to know about your bank account and your credit score and whether you're pre-qualified. But they have already decided where they could put
you.
Exactly.
They take you to the neighborhood. You're comfortable. Yes, go ahead.
Exactly. We just have to be aware of all of these things, and we really need to look at life as we could be the captain. This is our life, and we want to be the captain. Where do we want to go? What do we want to do? And sometimes we need help. So you got to call somebody to get some advice. How can I get there?
Come on, guys. You said a word and a mouthful right there. Like my mama used to say.
There's a whole speech by itself.
Yeah, we got to look at we're going to be in charge. We got to look at we are the captain.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stop saying we're going to be coming from the bottom that, they ain't going to give me a chance. You have to have those aspire to be, have dreams, aspire to inspire yourself. See,
and if you don't get that, you don't get that one chance, go to the next one.
That's right.
There you go.
Now, like I told somebody not long ago, they said, well, this didn't happen. I said, yeah, but there are 26 letters in the alphabet. If A didn't work out, you go to B.
That's right.
You keep going because keep knocking on the door.
Yep.
That's it. That's it.
My husband's first job came because he opened the telephone book and started calling companies from the letter A and kept calling until he got his first summer internship.
I tell you, it's so amazing. Attorney John, when you said your husband opened up a telephone book, ask somebody about a telephone book now.
I know, right? My children don't know what that is.
That's what I'm talking about. See, people like, what? A telephone book? I got a phone.
What you talking about?
Google.
I know.
What you talking about? So it's so amazing, but it's awesome to have Attorney Johnson on here sharing her wisdom with us. We're at the point now, we only have about 15 more minutes, but what I would like to do before we get ready to close out is, Attorney Johnson, I would like for you to kind of share some things, some events, even though I know the pandemic is going on. But what is dear to you that's happening with you like to share? And even if you want, people like to contact, if you want to leave some contact information, it's fine as well at this time. You can do that.
Absolutely. The thing that I want to share is that we have to be in charge. And that really means we have to get informed and we have to make ourselves aware. And when we see things going wrong, we cannot afford to look away. As we watch Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders being attacked and degraded, we cannot say, that doesn't matter to me. We can't afford to do that. We need all of the community support and togetherness that we can figure out as a people. We really, really do. We need friends and we need allies, and we need to think about it that way. So when horrible tragedies happen, don't turn away because you can't bear it. Sometimes we got to look at it. Sometimes we got to know that ain't nothing but grace that keeps us from being in that position.
Amen.
We got to be together with other people. And there are many people who want to be with us. We got to remember to extend grace to people so that as we have powerful conversations with other people, we can allow people to say the wrong thing.
Exactly.
We have to not judge people who want to talk to us about race and unity, and we sitting there going, that ain't how you say it. That ain't what it is. We got to do better. And we said something earlier about dreaming. We haven't taught our children how to dream.
How to dream.
And that's where we need to make a big investment. We need to teach them how to dream and how to dream big. We have to stop telling babies they can't do this and they can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to work on that as a community.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
There we go.
Those are the things I would leave people with. That we, the name of my business, Our Work LLC, the name of it is because the work of diversity, inclusion, and belonging, that work belongs to all of us. We cannot make it without people who look different. We can't make it to justice without white people.
Mm-hmm.
We can't make it without Mexican people.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stop thinking that we can make it alone. This is our work. We are all in this system together, and it is up to all of us, every one of us, to take a role, to take leadership, and to make change. And that's what I need everybody to focus on. So that's what I would say.
That's awesome, I tell you.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Mm.
Yeah, my. And like I said, you're on the line, and I really appreciate everybody joining us, and hopefully something you exposed to tonight that will allow you to get that burning desire inside of you to say, I want to address this issue. I want to see what's going on with this issue, whether in regards to education, whether in regards to lending, housing, whether it's just discrimination, just being treated fair in all forms, or whether it's workplace, even our own community, we got to be treating each other fair. Don't let the pandemic define our future like we're allowing it to be doing, because some people play on that, allow the pandemic to define how it's going to be. We got to make a difference. And I ask you to get with your family members. Start, I'm big, and Scarlett know we big, Attorney Johnson,
mm-hmm.
on grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
Block by block.
Block.
We're going to start down here at home, in your home, and work your way out. So we can make a difference. That's what it's all about. We just want to talk about plain old life issues on this show, but we want to do it from your home to our home to the next person's home. And that tonight, knowledge was shared, and hopefully you gain some. Again, Attorney Johnson, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a blast. Thank you, Lord.
Thank you so much for having me.
Connect.
Mm-hmm.
And we will make sure it's information in regards to your organization. There, someone want to contact you, we'll make sure, and you can get it started. We'll make sure we get stuff posted, because I'm on 15 social media sites.
Okay.
I am. So I want to get everything out there. So let's do that. Again, thank you so much. It was a pleasure. God is so good. Scarlett, you want to share your thoughts as we get ready to leave?
I want to thank her for coming on tonight. It was an absolute blast. And if, in the information that Dr. B getting out to all of our social media areas and also internationally, Our Work LLC, she does a series of seminars periodically. This last one was about church and race and things like that. They're just awesome. And so I want to thank you, my dear, for coming on and sharing with us.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do it.
Oh, bless you. We have a lot going on in this country, and, you know, none of what we're talking about tonight is going to make a difference if we don't have a democracy for it to go on in.
Yes.
Our democracy is under attack, and you can't sit on the sidelines with this. You're going to have to be voters, and it can't just be doing a presidential election. You've got to be aware. You've got to be involved. You've got to be engaged, and then you have to get out, because when people cannot even get water or someone give them something to sustain them while they're sitting in long lines that people have established for us to not vote, what is that telling us? But our democracy is on the line. You know, we say that we like freedom. We like doing things that Americans do. But when people are restricting those movements and those things, we've got to take We got to be aware of this, and we got to take the ball in our hands and not have people pigeonhole us that we don't vote, we don't do this, we don't do that. Stop having people say to us what we don't do. Let's prove them wrong.
Yes.
And to do that, you have to be out there. You got to do what you got to do to make your voice heard. And that's done for every American at the ballot box. That is our fundamental right. That's what makes us a democracy and not a tin-horn dictatorship. We've got to do it. And we got to stop being pigeonholed. And I think that's what Attorney Johnson talked about tonight, you know, about how people call us mud. I'm just surprised at that. No, I'm not surprised. It's just makes you angry. It makes me angry anyway. But, you know, that people just pigeonhole us as a culture. And I refuse to be pigeonholed. Thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate you all in our audience.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you, Scotty, so much. We also have Lisa. She's on our call-in line. We had to kind of get off there, Scotty. But Lisa, you want to share some songs with Dr. O'Head? She had to leave. Okay, Lisa.
Well, good night, guys. Remember, the electronics, not my fault.
Awesome, awesome. I'll tell you. Yeah, she had a challenge there, but it's a blessing. It's a blessing to have her there, and she was able to at least watch for a while and listen. Attorney Johnson, again, thank you so much. It was truly, truly a pleasure to meet a lady as well as Scott, as well as Lisa, women of finer representation in womanhood. That's what it's all about. It's all about that now.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the blue and white. Thank you for the support. And we're going to do it always as a family. It's been awesome. We've had some awesome people join us on Facebook. People join us. They've been typing in things. I couldn't read as fast as they were typing. But that's all right. It's going to be all right. You can go back to the Facebook page or Instagram and check it out. But I want to give a shout-out. What we do every show, Attorney Johnson, give our people a shout-out who's joined us. A lot of time on Instagram, they don't have names, they have handles. So we give them credit for taking part and being a part of it. So
they're a wonderful audience. We got wonderful audience.
Exactly.
We really do.
We have D at D Diva. She's joining us. Thank you so much. Emma Gaston, Inspired 1975. Thank you so much. We have Biker Chick. 300. All right, man. Carter, 21678. I only can read what's up here. And he has some notes that he wanted to share with us. We also have the real, see, I have to pick a real key brains. Thank you so much. We also have Tyrone G, R11. Thank you, Tyrone. Jack 919, and those are the ones on Instagram, on Facebook, Latay Pickett of Inspired to Inspire, Inspired to Inspire. And I'm going to give her a shout-out, Sarah. She made a commitment and joined an organization and crossed on last Wednesday. Now, I have to give a shout-out because as well as our co-host is a member of that, this young lady just crossed with the seven other members. She crossed into Delta Sigma Theta Sorority.
Congratulations.
She's been on our show, and she's been a guest on the show. So she had her coming out party last week, and we just want to give her a shout on this show, but she's always listening. But she has a ministry that will help a lot of families during the holidays, during the pandemic, Inspired to Inspire. We also have Elroy Terrell join us. We also have Donald Van Horn. Thank you, Donald, so much for joining. That's one of Lisa's true good friends, classmate, I believe. He's always joining us. I think he's in that state of Ohio. He's joining us. So those are the individuals, and a lot of comments went along with it, and I appreciate each and every one of you all. You know, it's time to sign off. We got 5 minutes. I tell you, like I always tell everybody, you know, hashtag is responsible. We're in times when you have to be responsible. You have to be responsible for making sure your life is in order and also your family members. So we work block by block. Next hashtag is always One Life Matter. Challenging time, but every life matters. It doesn't matter who it is. It does matter in regards to our show right here. Keep on grinding. That's another hashtag, communicate for understanding. And I always tell everybody as I leave, tell you tonight, hug your family members. Tell them you love them. If you can't physically touch them, go to some way of communication through technology. Send them a hug. Go virtual and tell them you love them. Because as I close out and I say thank you again, I always tell you emphatically, because it comes from my heart and my soul. I love you, and ain't a thing you can do about it. Have an awesome rest of the night. Check us out tomorrow. We have the Dr. Lowe Show, and we're going to make this thing happen. We're going to make it do what it do. I'm going to say good night and take care of yourself, because God loves you.
I know people.